I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. If you take a close look at portion size on food labels, you'll see that they are pretty unrealistic. Who, after all, eats just a half a cup of ice cream for dessert or a snack for that matter? Last week, the FDA and First Lady Michelle Obama announced plans to revamp food labels, making portion size closer to what people actually eat. The proposal also includes bolder print for calories and a line for added sugar. So it changing the label design and content help consumers make healthier choices? How would these changes affect the food industry? We have two guests who have joined us. Jeremy Keyes is Associate Professor of Marketing and the Richard Naclerio Emerging Scholar in Public Policy at Villanova University School of Business. Jeremy Keyes, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Also with us is Nancy Child. She's a Professor of Food Marketing, also the Gerald E. Peck Fellow at St. Joseph's University. And Nancy Childs, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty.
Nancy, let me begin with you. It's been about 20 years. So the current labels have been used for about 20 years now. Is it time for a change?
Oh, sure. There's a lot that we've learned about nutrition, but also consumers have gotten more interested. There's many ways that we're going to benefit from change.
And is it because consumers are that much more informed? We're also dealing with an obesity crisis, increased sugars, all these things that seem to have happened in the last couple of decades?
Oh, yeah. And I think that we've just learned a lot on the nutrition field. I think the types of products that are available have changed a lot. And we've also learned on a political level, on a policy level, ways in which to engage industry more constructively in creating a healthier food supply.
And I'll pick up on all of that, Jeremy Keyes, to get you in on the conversation. Time for a change?
I think so. I think these changes are encouraging, and I think Nancy makes a great point that I think some segments of consumers are more interested, and certainly there's segments of consumers that are highly knowledgeable and highly motivated to utilize on-pack information. So changes on pack, whether it be these proposals for new formats for the facts label or the front of pack initiatives, I think can be very helpful for these segments of consumers that are motivated and educated enough to utilize the information.
You say the word some segments of the population. Which segments are we talking about?
Well, that's a great question. I think that, one thing that is a little bit concerning to me is that, it seems to me the segments that are most at risk for obesity and obesity-related diseases, those that are perhaps less educated, low literacy populations, segments of African American and Hispanic minority populations. These consumers, I wonder, in terms of the content on the facts label. We're still asking them to be motivated enough to pick up the package, flip it over, and try to process what still is a lot of information and some complex information. There's some studies out there that suggest only around 30% of the population really understands how to utilize percent daily values. I'm not sure the lay consumer really understands the implications for added sugars relative to natural sugars. But so I think certainly for some segments that are motivated and educated, this is great. For others, I'm not sure how helpful it will be.
Well, let me give you a chance to weigh in on that, Nancy Childs. Do you agree with Jeremy Keyes?
Oh, I agree definitely about the fact that the population will have various levels of value out of this, but I don't think any of them will be moved into a more negative position. I think this label will make it easier for them to pull something out of it. The label is still complex. It still demands a lot of understanding. And as an aside, I think this just underscores why we as a society have to continue supporting science education so that consumers can have this wherewithal as we share more information with them with the intent for them to make a smarter decision.
We
know that there are segments that aren't going, this will not resonate easily for some segments.
So do we need some kind of a promotional education campaign to get everyone more involved in reading labels, Nancy?
do. And we had a small start last week. If one steps back and just takes a value of all the media that's occurred over this label announcement in the last several days, I mean, that alone is creating attention on the web, sound bites, news bites, etc. And so that's a start to say to people, hey, this matters, pay attention. Some will, some won't. Some people live very complicated and challenging lives, and this asks you to step back and make a decision. And it's asking you to do that on a daily basis, and that's hard for people.
Mm. Jeremy, I'm actually looking at the current labels that we're all familiar with and the proposal. Some basic changes here. One would be literally the calories in bigger, bolder numbers. Would that make a difference, do you think? Just having that information sort of jump out at people when they look at a label, is that a smart thing to do?
Well, that's a great question. I'm not sure. I mean, I think that's an empirical question. I think research will be used to demonstrate. I think it has to be taken to demonstrate this. Especially, I'm sure we'll get into the marketing implications for the food industry. But I completely agree with Nancy. You know, it certainly can't hurt. I don't think people are going to be worse off for these changes. And I think education, just like Nancy said, is absolutely key for any sort of one-pack labeling to be effective.
There is some debate about where you put this information, and I'm assuming if we're talking about real estate on a package, Jeremy, if it's on the front of the package, that's prime real estate.
It sure is, but I think the food industry understands the importance of these issues. I mean, they have the Facts Up Front initiative, which they're in the process of rolling out. They're going to be backing that with a $50 million media consumer education campaign. So I think it's encouraging to see the food industry on board, the Grocery Manufacturers Association, Food Marketing Institute on board with some of these nutrition labeling initiatives.
To you, Nancy, having information on front, are consumers more willing and able to read that information because that's what's staring at them on the grocery aisle?
Well, you can think of it as a shortcut. For people who are looking, it's right there. So kind of philosophically, what we're saying is we want information available to people so they can use it to make comparisons and smarter choices. So the more we can put it in front of them in a uniform fashion, the easier it is for them to do so if that's something that they're inclined to do. So that second point, that second caveat, is how do we get more people interested in understanding what they're eating and whether it's the right products for their dietary needs, their family's needs.
I mean, is that through advertising campaigns, through conversations with their physician? How do you see that message getting out, Nancy?
I think it has to get out on every avenue we can think of. We need 360 voices on them. But we know consumers get a lot from word of mouth. Consumers share back and forth. Social media gives them a lot of avenues to get information. But we also know as we get out there, information is more mixed. It's from sometimes sources that have their own type of agenda. It's really a challenge for consumers, which comes back to the more we can empower them with education, the better they are.
Jeremy, you mentioned the added sugar line. This is a proposal which is to include a kind of a separate line for added sugar to food products, if I can use those words. It seems like you're raising questions about that.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure when I think, I think about I've studied this for years, and I'm just not sure, again, whether the general population understands the importance of added sugars. I'm sure that the science is there. I'm sure added sugars are very important. I'm sure this is very well thought out as it was proposed. But another consideration is, adding things to the label, adding added sugars line, requiring potassium and vitamin D levels. I'm just not sure people will will understand the relevance for those pieces of information in the context of their own diets.
Going back to you, Nancy, I was reading that when it comes to added sugars, it's something like added sugars adds about 15% of calories are from added sugars. So this is a very important ingredient.
Well, it is. And Marty, I agree with everything Jeremy said regarding consumers, but I think this is brilliant because this becomes an issue that's really directed at the food industry. This becomes a measurable feature of comparison on the food label that is prompting industry manufacturers to reformulate to lower, just as we saw them do once trans fats had to be reported. And once it became transparent, once they were competing on that number with the other manufacturers, we saw that number shrink. This is, to me, a very significant incentive to the food industry to compete through reformulation and dropping the amount of sugar in their products. What it is, in essence, is pulling tons of sugar out of the food supply. And this, to me, these particular points you raised function more as incentives as to the industry than they are particularly of value to the consumer. To the knowledgeable consumer, it helps. Vast number of consumers not, but I think it's going to have the potential to have dramatic results.
Well, Jeremy, do you agree with that? That if consumers know about how much added sugar in their foodstuff, that they will respond and put pressure on companies. You think it works that way?
Well, I'm not sure. I first of all, I completely agree with Nancy. The reformulation, consequence for the added sugars, that potential is great. So I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure that it will be the consumers that will necessarily be putting pressure on the food manufacturers. But you know, if this proposal goes through and they have to, you know, list added sugars, certainly I think there can be some reformulation that could have a significant impact. I agree.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about proposed changes to food labels, including things like including the amount of added sugar. I do want to talk about portion size because that's another proposed change. Talking with Jeremy Keyes, he's an associate professor of marketing, also the Richard Nicolario Emerging Scholar in Public Policy at Villanova University School of Business. Nancy Childs is a professor of food marketing, also the Gerald E. Peck Fellow at St. Joseph's University. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. What do you think about food labels and how would you like them changed? That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Studio Incaminati, School for Contemporary Realist Art in Center City, Philadelphia, supports WHYY and presents Open House March 15th and 16th. The fully accredited professional program curriculum comes to life during live model painting demonstrations by award-winning instructors, private tours of on-site studios, time to talk with students, instructors, and alumni who are working in the arts, and information about the new Integrated Art Studio major available with Chestnut Hill College. StudioIncaminati.org.
In the late 60s, there were few band leaders as charismatic as Sly Stone.
He was absolutely a visionary person. You know, he could stop a riot or he could start a riot. He had that power.
That's sax player Jerry Martini. He and Family Stone bandmate Cynthia Robinson join us this week on Sound Opinions.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, how author Olivia Judson grieved her late father by sorting through his belongings.
It was a kind of long catharsis. I mean, I think that it was a lot of just moving things, getting rid of old curtains. But there's also an opportunity to reflect.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne talking with Nancy Childs and Jeremy Keyes about an announcement last week by First Lady Michelle Obama and the FDA, some proposed changes to food package labels. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Nancy, before we get to our callers, let me go back to you. And I think the big change that certainly caught my eye is the change in portion size. The idea that a half a cup of ice cream is a regular portion, that just doesn't seem to make sense today. My understanding is going from an 8-ounce glass of soda to a 20-ounce glass of soda, that's a much more typical amount of soda that people are drinking these days. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it is much more typical, and people do need to understand that. Marty, I had mixed feelings to this, and as Jeremy said earlier, there's a lot of material here that needs some empirical investigation. My concern is when we see these more realistic serving sizes, which are informing people of what they're consuming, I also have concern that we are in a very implicit way saying this is a recommended serving size, which it is not. And so in moving from the past to this present suggestion, I have some concern that we're giving permission for a 20-ounce drink or a cup of ice cream. And again, nothing wrong individually about those consumptions. It's when those consumptions aren't thoughtfully integrated into a more balanced diet. So that's where I would like to understand better how the consumer looks at that new number. What we've seen in the past over the last two decades is when we lower a number, as we went through that whole low-fat era, people saw a low-fat product as permission to consume more of it.
Right.
Rather than just be satisfied that this is low fat and I'm getting away with less.
Well, Jeremy, I'd be curious about how you see this proposed change.
Yeah, I agree with Nancy. That the unintended consequence of giving consumers permission to or encouraging them to drink that 20-ounce soda is certainly a concern that needs to be investigated. I do understand the proposal may have dual columns that would offer different types of serving sizes, so that may somewhat address that concern. But then again, you're adding more information that might confuse consumers, and we know from the literature that more information isn't always necessarily better. As people see this information, that might for some segments they might just kind of check out because it's too much.
But I think you could also see it the other way, which is that people look at a tub of ice cream and think, oh, a portion, I'm only going to get 140 calories, when really they're getting 240 calories because they're eating twice the portion size.
Sure, absolutely.
Nancy, you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. And the other unintended consequence is when we think about ingredients in the food supply, which we'd really like to see people consume less of, and most notably sodium, because we way over-consume sodium. When you move to a higher portion size, you're also consuming even more of these ingredients. We'd like to see people cut back on in general in their consumption. So that's still, these are again in these possible unintended consequences out there that give you pause.
Well, let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. And you can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And it looks like we have Carrie from Flemington, New Jersey, joining our conversation. Carrie, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I just want to say I'm enjoying the program tremendously.
Good.
And that I would like to see, the added sugar be added into, the little nutrition label, because I just did a detox diet where I cut a lot of things out of my diet, but sugar was one of them, and I was just surprised by reading the labels, what had added sugar in it, like tomato sauce, and, ketchup is really bad, and, I think a lot of people don't realize how much sugar is added into products. I mean, sugar is like a drug for your brain, like alcohol is, and, you know, your brain just craves it. You know, I did go through a little bit of withdrawal from it, but I feel so much better not having sugar, added sugar in my diet. It's just amazing.
That's interesting, Carrie. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Jeremy, I'd be curious about your response. I mean, one thing we have learned is that there is so much sugar added to our diet.
Yeah, I think Carrie's a great example of the type of consumer that this proposal would really, really benefit. I mean, she obviously is very conscious about what she puts in her body, and she reads labels and is very diligent. And unfortunately, though, most of us out there aren't as educated and as motivated as Carrie is as we choose our foods.
Let me get, looks like Ron from, looks like Yaden, Pennsylvania, to join our conversation. And Ron, go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, how are you doing, folks?
Good.
It's a great show, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I believe that the increase in the size and the increase in the important information on our labels will increase people's interest naturally. I believe advertisers have used that train of thought for years on their boxes for labels. And for instance, when McDonald's put their calories on their drive-through, and you realize how many calories you were using per sandwich, that was could curb your enthusiasm for purchasing that product.
Ron, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and we have a guest who will be joining us in just a couple of minutes to speak specifically about that. But Nancy Childs, let me give you a chance to respond. I mean, if advertising works, why not labels?
Well, I think labels do work. They're not a failure. They're useful. They are used by people. We see people look at labels. A larger percentage of people look at labels every year when they do an annual measure of that. It's just that everyone's different. Everyone's mm-hmm. lifestyle is different. Everyone's interest is different. And they're vital for people who have certain dietary issues. Need that information as they modify their diet.
I was reading about a proposal to do sort of red light, green light, yellow light, to use colors on labels, and that would be important information or useful information to consumers. Jeremy, does that make sense to you?
It may. It's a more of a prescriptive, interpretive approach. I think we would be moving away from nutrition facts to more nutrition guide or guidelines if we went that direction. There's a big Institute of Medicine report that studied various different types of labeling, and certainly traffic light labeling is popular in the European Union, and it certainly has some benefits. But from that report, I think we concluded that there's really no perfect way of doing this. Every type of nutrition disclosure or label has its benefits and its kind of drawbacks as well.
What do you think of the traffic lights, Nancy?
I agree with what Jeremy just said, and in particular, the traffic lights are telling you about the product you have at hand and whether that's a good choice. When you're giving nutrition information, you're helping people integrate into the larger concept of a diet. And so if people can achieve that level of using nutrition, then they're in a much better place.
But how much information do you think, there's only so much you can put on a label and make it, and I'm someone that reads labels, and it's not always clear to me exactly what it is that I'm eating. But it seems to me there's a limit, Nancy, about what we can include on a label.
I agree. And again, I think these are empirical questions, and they're questions of optimizing information. But they're also the label is also there to highlight what we think is our current public health guidelines and goals. And so in that way, it exists there to provide the information. But we have our dietary guidance, which comes out every 5 years, to sort of help give the context.
Jeremy, someone posted on our Facebook page about including GMOs, and you do see that on some labels. Does that seem like a smart thing to do?
It could be. I mean, I think Nancy and I agree that some testing needs to be done, and I think that, you know, we could kind of circle back on how the food industry is going to respond to these proposals, and I think they're going to demand that there be some testing, and they're going to demand some evidence that these new labels actually add value, actually make a difference for people, because there's some serious cost implications to changing labels when you think about the number of food products out there.
In fact, from the Grocery Manufacturers Association, they described this as a thoughtful review, but also that it would cost, I think, something like $2 billion to redesign labels.
Absolutely, and I don't think that it's fair to ask the industry to undertake that sort of cost without showing some pretty strong evidence that this is a this is going to be impactful.
And that's Jeremy Keyes, again, Associate Professor of Marketing at Villanova University School of Business. Nancy Childs, a Professor of Food Marketing at St. Joseph's University. And joining us now is Amy Auchincloss. She's an Assistant Professor in the Department of Epidemiology and Biostatistics at the School of Public Health at Drexel University. And Amy trudged up through the ice and snow to be with us here in our Philadelphia studios. And nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Your research looks at restaurants and menus, but you've been listening in as Jeremy and Nancy have been talking about these food labels on packaging. What do you think?
Well, I guess one of the comments I'd like to add is that the package size, I would just make sure that the listeners understand that by law, the label information on serving sizes must be based on what people actually eat, not what they should be eating. So that was part of the impetus for changing some of the guidelines for what is on the packet is listed as a serving on a particular package. And we do know there's very strong evidence from the marketing world that our the other guests are part of, that package size has a strong effect on what people eat. Mm. So it does seem that these guidelines the labels are trying to reflect both what people actually are consuming, both in terms of the low nutrient quality for some of the population level dietary intakes that we've been observing, and also the sizing and over portion size essentially of a lot of what we are consuming. But the reality is that's the environment that we're living in. That's the environment that we're making choices in. And so they're trying to throw, if you throw a 400 calorie, a large font 400 calorie notification on the back of a container, that may resonate a little bit more than saying this has two servings. You should only be consuming one serving, and that serving only has 200 calories, when in fact most people will be consuming the 400 calories.
But what you're saying is that labels should, by law, then reflect what people actually eat.
Yeah, that is actually the mandate, which is what they are responding to.
Nancy, do you want to weigh in on this? Because you were concerned that by making the portions more realistic, that the message from, I guess, the food industry or maybe even the FDA is that this is what, or maybe even from the First Lady, that this is what we should be consuming.
Well, it is a concern how the consumers interpret the information. And as I mentioned before, when we look back at what have we learned through the whole no-fat era, consumers tend to eat more of what they desire when they're told it contains less. It's like a permission not to do with the less, but, oh, that means I can enjoy a larger amount. I don't have documentation. This is an empirical question, and it's a question of how consumers interpret information. I personally think the large calorie number is very important, and that's the holistic emphasis on saying, let's just eat less calories as the prime driver in reducing obesity. If we can boil it all down, it's the calorie number, the energy density, so to speak, that we want to see people consume less of these calories.
Jeremy Keyes, I'd be curious about your response. And I mean, it's an interesting discussion about how people read labels, what it means to them, how they interpret it.
Sure. I think it goes back to what Nancy said earlier in the program that, when it comes down to it, we're hoping that we're going to make things easier for consumers. And easy is the key word there, easy for them to make comparisons and smart choices across different products and different categories. So, still as we talk about a soda, this is something people consume on a regular basis. So making these changes to the facts panel, we're expecting mm-hmm. that people are going to actually flip the bottle over and study the, and take a look at the calories. I mean, this is if people drink sodas every day or whatever. You're in the supermarket. You got your kids with you. You're under time pressure. It still requires people to have the motivation to pick up the package and turn it over and examine the label. So, I think it's a step in the right direction for sure. But in terms of the first lady, suggesting it's going to make a big difference. I'm just not sure how big of a difference these changes are going to make.
And I don't know how important this is, but there was a study that came out recently saying that the number of overweight toddlers, I guess 2 to 5 year olds, has gone down pretty dramatically. Now the question is whether that will be sustained. I'm not even sure, Amy Auchincloss, that we know why that is, but it is interesting. And apparently young children are consuming less sugars, and it looks like there might be some payoff to that.
Yeah, that was a very hopeful signal. I mean, unfortunately, the story is still that there is an obesity epidemic, and it's on the rise, especially in older age groups. So, but that is a promising signal, and hopefully that does provide some indication that things are perhaps moving in the right direction.
Let me squeeze a caller on before we have to take our break. Nancy from South Philadelphia. Nancy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to comment about energy bars. This is not all of them, but a lot of them have not just added sugar, but several different kinds of added sugar, which are in under different names. And you need to know a little chemistry to recognize that it's more sugar.
You agree with that, Nancy Childs?
Well, I do agree that consumers will not recognize all of that as sugar.
How about for you, Jeremy Keyes?
Absolutely. I keep going back to education and motivation. Some of the stuff, it takes a highly educated and motivated consumer to interpret this information.
And it seems like you might need several degrees in order, advanced degrees in order to understand it as well. Well, I'm going to say goodbye to Jeremy Keyes and Nancy Childs. Thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
Marty, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Nancy Childs from St. Joseph's University, Jeremy Keyes from Villanova University, and Amy Auchincloss staying with us for the rest of the hour. She and some of her colleagues have done some really interesting research on menus and when there's nutrition information on menus and how consumers respond to that. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Time. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Beethoven's only concerto for the violin is as much about the orchestra as it is the soloist. The Philadelphia Orchestra is joined by Nikolai Schneider for Beethoven's violin concerto. Also, Stefan Denev conducts Shostakovich's 10th Symphony. Tickets online or at 215-893-1999 today. March 6th, 7th, and 8th at the Kimmel Center, Beethoven's violin concerto with Nikolai Schneider and the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Suddenly, from behind the clouds,
director John Ford shot footage of the Battle of Midway during World War II. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Mark Harris, author of Five Came Back, about five Hollywood directors who volunteered for service and chronicled World War II. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY. We tell our stories to be heard, to be known, to better understand ourselves and others.
hearing someone else's story changes us, and telling our own does even more. They foster empathy for others on the deepest level and create compassion for ourselves as well. On this Voices in the Family, we talk with three therapists whose work with interviews of Holocaust survivor families transformed their own lives. Today at noon, here on WHYY FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. We've been talking about food labels, but what about calorie count on restaurant menus? Do they influence diners' choices? And our guest, again from Drexel University, Amy Auchincloss, her research looks into eating out. And again, assistant professor in the Department of Epidemiology and Biostatistics at the School of Public Health at Drexel University here in Philadelphia. And if you have any questions or comments about dining out, and we'd be curious about whether you read those labels, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Amy, you look at a very specific part of the dining out industry. What were you looking at?
Yeah, we have, so the research have found generally that posting calories on fast food menu boards hasn't had a big impact on consumers. So this is the point of purchase where a calorie is listed next to the price on the fast food menu board. There's been either no change in customer response, or it's been very small. So we wanted to see whether customers who dined at sit-down, full-service restaurants noticed and used menu labels. And Philadelphia labeling regulations provided a unique opportunity to look at this. Philly regulations are such that they require chain restaurants with 15 or more outlets nationally to display not only calories, but saturated fat, sodium, carbohydrates, and trans fat on all printed menus. So this would printed menus would be typically displayed, of course, at a full-service sit-down chain restaurant. So what we did is one component of the study was to survey customers, 648 customers exiting outlets of a large national sit-down restaurant chain that had outlets inside Philadelphia where there were labels required and outlets outside Philadelphia where labels weren't required. And we asked customers to answer a few questions and give us their itemized receipt from their meal. And then we were able to put that information into our database and analyze what the nutrient value was for customers that were eating at restaurants that showed labels versus customers that were eating at restaurants that didn't show labels.
And just so we know who we're talking about here, we're talking about Red Lobster, Capital Grill, Chili's, Olive Garden, IHOP, TGIF, and the Hard Rock.
Yeah, those are the types of those are the names of some of the chains that are considered full service restaurant chains that would be subject to labeling in the Philadelphia area.
And what did you find?
So what we found was that most of the customers at the full-service restaurants are seeing the labels. So about 80% of customers were reporting seeing the labels. And among the people that saw the labels, about 34% actually reported using the labels to decide what they wanted to order, with 66% reporting that they didn't use the labels. The customers, overall, when we pooled all the data together and adjusted, did some statistical adjustment for customer characteristics that may influence labeling use, there was about 155 calorie difference between the customers purchased at the Philadelphia restaurants versus what the customers purchased outside of Philadelphia. And this was really driven by that 34% who saw and reported using the labels. They purchased 400 calories less, which was quite a large drop.
Indeed. I wonder, though, whether when people go out for dinner or lunch or maybe even breakfast, do they even want to think about things like calories? After all, you're going out to enjoy a meal in a different locale.
That's right. That's right. I think it is. Some of the reasons why labeling might not be so successful in the restaurant venues is that the context doesn't really support nutrition information. It doesn't really support healthy eating per se. I mean, there's a lot of marketing to increase more drinks, more food purchased. And people are there to have a good time, and people think of this as a splurge. Unfortunately, though, in the way we're living today, we can no longer think of it as a splurge because we are eating out very frequently. On average, people are eating out at least once, twice a week, particularly in urban areas and where there's access to a lot of restaurants. So this is we do need to think of this more as part of our meal plan and not a splurge, a celebration where we can go all out.
Interesting, though. A third of people looked at the menus, looked at some of the nutrition information, and then made what sounds like relatively healthy or, I guess, healthier choices.
Right.
Reduce their calorie intake.
Right. This was a much larger than we've seen in the fast food restaurant venues. So one of the reasons why is people are probably spending more time reading the menu. They're not just passing through. They don't already know what they're going to order. There's a lot more items on the menu to choose from. The other issues are that the numbers that they're looking at are much higher. I mean, where some of the sticker shock is that there's 1,500 calories in the entree that you're selecting. There's 3,200 milligrams sodium in that entree. So when we did some focus groups, so a few other components of this study was focus groups and also menu profile analysis of the quality of the sit-down restaurant chain menus. And in the focus groups, what we were finding is that people saw, when they saw a lot of zeros, they were alarmed. They weren't sure what it meant. But in the U.S., sodium is required to be displayed as milligrams. So they're going to see a lot of zeros if it's 3,200 milligrams. 2,000 calories is all most adults need in a day, and there's close to 2,000 calories in the average meals that we found that customers had purchased. So even the people that did use labels and made a decision to order fewer calories based on those labels did still purchase way too many calories for a single meal. They were purchasing 1,400 calories, whereas everyone else was purchasing about 1,800 calories.
Wow, close to a daily amount of calories.
Close to a daily amount.
Is that because we're talking portion size, or we're just talking the kind of food that gets served? And then we'll get to some of our callers.
Yeah, that's a good point. So on average, they were ordering a bit over two items per person, food items per person. And each menu section in the sit-down chains, it's not uncommon that each menu section, the appetizers, the entrees, and the desserts have somewhere around 800 calories or so.
Wow.
So if they're not, even when we looked at the menu, on average, the menus at the sit-down chains, even if you use a half an appetizer, a half of a dessert, an entree, a side dish, and a drink, that's going to be 2,000 calories. So it's a combination of probably if they only had ordered just from the entree section, it wouldn't be so high. If they ordered just from the appetizer section, it wouldn't be so high. The combination of both, as well as drinks, which are adding calories. But I mean, one of the things that corresponds to the nutrient facts label changes is this issue of portion size, that they are the meals generally are too oversized, and we're trying to encourage restaurants to offer more small plates, half portion sizes. So for customers that do want to have smaller portions, there are some more options for them.
And just a quick follow-up, because I've eaten at some of these restaurants, and the menus have pictures, and I wonder whether pictures influence how people order.
Yeah, that actually surprised me. I didn't realize how much so this was in the focus groups. The focus group respondents were talked a lot about the pictures. Well, I'm not sure what I want when I get to the table, but when I open the menu and I look at those pictures, they look so good, I want to get that. And unfortunately, in some of the chains, it does, there is some variation, but in many of the chains, the pitchers are actually the items that are the most expensive. So they tend to be the high saturated fat, high meat, a lot of meats, large portion size, expensive dishes. So, I mean, you can understand the restaurant is looking to try to increase what consumers are spending at the restaurant, and so they're advertising their more expensive dishes, which also can coincide with higher portions and higher calories.
And talking with Amy Auchincloss about sit-down chains, their menus, and whether posting things like calorie count on their menus does influence how diners choose what they're going to eat. We'd love to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We have Nick joining us. And Nick, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, hi.
Hi there.
Let me begin by saying Michelle Obama is a big fat.
Oh, go away. Nick, I'm not going to talk to you. That is not how you begin a call into a radio show, or certainly not this one. You can disagree with the First Lady or anybody else, but that's not how you begin a conversation. Let's see if we can get some more callers in at 1-888-477-9499. I'd be curious about, Amy, about the response from chains to your research, whether you think some of these chain restaurants, as you say, I mean, this is how they make money, but is there some kind of interest or even sea change within the food industry to try to make menus and the food that restaurants serve healthier?
Well, I think across the board, consumers, public health professionals, and hospitality leaders have been surprised at the sodium levels and even at the calorie levels in the food. So, you know, these are not the restaurant industry is not typically looking at these things really, and they're looking at how to, you know, create the tastiest food for that's the most cost efficient for their business. So it for them as well to see some of this nutrient information, it has been important. Among the people in hospitality that we have shared this with, they are surprised, and so hopefully there is some recognition there that these really are too high. I know that some of the children's menus have gotten a lot of publicity, a lot of press, and there, some of those have improved. Some of the options for children's menus, at least, have improved.
Well, it's interesting to think about things like sugar, like, as you say, sodium, saturated fats. I mean, these are all in large quantities, and perhaps even together, not a particularly healthy diet.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that it's just even driving home to the restaurant industry as well as consumers that a teaspoon of salt, on average, contains the entire day's worth of sodium. So, I mean, just even small facts like that, 2 tablespoons butter is about all you need in terms of saturated fat. So, it's quite easy when cooking for a particular restaurant meal to rake up these values, mm-hmm. unless they're being very conscious not to.
It's interesting you said with the fast food chains where they list the content or the nutritional content not having much effect. And is that just because people have in their own mind, you know, I want that particular thing for lunch and I'm not going to think about whether it's good for me or bad for me or how many calories it is?
Yeah, I think it's so in the fast food venues, a lower proportion actually even see the labels, typically only about 50%. And some studies, a recent study that was done actually in the Philadelphia area that compared Philadelphia customers to Baltimore customers, found even lower than that,
really?
Less than 40%. So
they don't see it?
They don't even see it. You know, they're probably not even looking at the menu. So unless there's a price change, why bother look at the menu if you know what you're going to want? The menus are quite limited, so there's not a lot of choice there. So unless you're not a frequent customer at at a particular fast food restaurant, you are unlikely to even look at the menu.
So taking your research, saying that a third of people looking at a menu will think about it and perhaps use that information in making their choice for their breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Taking that information, how do we extrapolate from that?
Well, I think the take home for some of this work is that not everyone is going to respond. Not everyone is going to see. A majority of them do see if given a particular context where they may be sitting down, having an opportunity to read through a menu. But there is a subset of consumers that are willing and also able to process this information, and that there's an opportunity, I think, for restaurants, for the hospitality industry to market more to those consumers, and to bring those into the restaurant, or encourage them to be patrons at a restaurant if you have healthier options on the menu. But one of the things that also relates for our research that relates to the nutrition facts changes is the format of labels, of menu labels. So there's been some work around how does the display alter our processing of the information. So sometimes you'll see on the calorie labels, there's dashes, there's quite a wide range of numbers that they're saying a particular item could contain, and it depends a lot on certain customizations of that item. In the sit-down restaurant study, there were most of the Philadelphia restaurants display nutrition information using what we call a locker code format where there's a bunch of numbers and then there's a key at the bottom describing what those numbers are. The restaurant chain that we did our survey from actually has a much easier to read format for displaying the labels, and that may have contributed to actually people paying attention to them.
Well, something to think about going forward. Amy Auchincloss, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. Thanks very much. And she's with the School of Public Health at Drexel University. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out much more about this program. Also, how to be a listener and how to be a caller to the program. You might want to check that out as well. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Debbie Bilder, and Emily Bryant. I'm Marty Moscow, and thank you so much for joining us.